everybody. Welcome back. Thank you. If you're a returning listener, thank you so much for coming back and listening to this podcast. If you're a new listener, hello, my name is Veronica Welch. I am a single mom of one living in California, and this is my podcast talking to different moms from all over the country, all over the world, about their experience being a single mom. I'm very excited to be recording this episode today with one of my friends. Her name is Carla. She is a single mom and a grandmother, which you wouldn't even think looking at her. She's gorgeous, but she has grandchildren and raised her children as a single mother. So I'm going to toss it over to her and let her introduce herself, and we will get our discussion going.
Hi, like Veronica said, my name is Carla, and I'm 52 years old, and I am the proud mother of two adult children. My son is 31, and my daughter is 26, and both of my kids now have children of their own, so I am also a grandmother. My son has a daughter, and she is 2, and my daughter has a son, and he just turned 4, and so I have been really working on myself and trying to raise my children. I know that they're adults, but I feel like even when they're in their 20s and 30s, they still need their parent, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so just trying to learn, you know, how to do that. And yeah, I live in California, Southern California, and I'm currently in a doctorate program pursuing my PsyD, and I have my master's in MFT.
Nice. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Carla, for coming on. Just to kind of be transparent, Carla and I are colleagues. We're coworkers, and we'll just leave it at that. We work together, and we met probably, let's see, when did you start? I started at our place of employment a few months before you did. So did you start, like, it was like the beginning of the year of 2022, maybe?
February.
Okay. Yeah. So we've known each other a few years now, and I'm just very honored and happy and that she decided to come on to the podcast and tell her story. As soon as we met, we clicked just on so many levels, especially motherhood. And I just feel very honored to be her friend and to be that she's taking the time today to talk to us. So it'll be exciting. All right. So Carla, oh, go ahead.
I said, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. It's going to be good. It'll be good. You have an incredible story and you're just an incredible woman. And so I'm so excited for everybody to hear all about your life and your journey. Okay. So let's get started. You've got 2 kids that are now parents themselves. So I guess just tell us a little bit about what your life looks like now. Like, we'll go into like what, you know, having kids and being a single mom, but how do you balance everything now, being still being a mom to adults and a grandmother and working and going to school, getting your PhD? I mean, that's major. That is a lot of hard work. So like, what does your life look like? How do you balance it?
Yeah, I think I'm still learning that. I think I'm learning how to balance, because, you know, being in school, I only go part-time. So I work full-time and I go to school part-time. Okay. My daughter does reside with me, with my grandson, which is really great. And my son lives like 3 minutes away from here. So I get to see him, you know, often. And he comes and visits, and we spend lots of time together. But I think one of the things that I do is I try to be intentional about, you know, my work time, making sure that gets done. And then also being able to, you know, focus on my school. So currently, like, this, it's the summer session. So I'm out for summer session. And I try to spend lots of time with my kids during those times, because when I'm in school, I may not be able to do all the things that they want to do. We visit Disneyland a lot. And so sometimes I can't go, or, you know, there's things that come up. And so I really try to figure out that work-life balance type of thing. You know, I also am in therapy. So I've been with my current therapist for about 3 years. And so I make sure that I find time for that. One thing I haven't really found time for, and I'd like to, is more exercise. So I try to get outdoors as much as possible, but I haven't been able to fit that part in yet. But everything else, I think that I'm still, it's a work in progress.
Yeah. Okay. See, let's start with your kids. So how old were you when you had your oldest child? And kind of explain to anybody listening the story of becoming a mother, what that looked like, what your life to look like, what led you to becoming a single mom? What happened?
Yeah. So when I became pregnant with my son, I was about 22 years old when I got pregnant with him, and I was with his father not very long, about 4 months. And then I got pregnant, and then pretty much our relationship ended, and I guess he decided it wasn't what he wanted. And so, you know, I just said I was going to go ahead and stick it out and do what was right for me and my son. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very difficult because I wanted his father in his life. I wanted to make those connections, and I really gave a lot of effort, but it just wasn't something he was interested in. And I wanted someone for my son that wanted to be there. So I kind of gave up trying, you know, for the most part, and decided to go ahead and move on with my child. And it was a good time for me to have my son, because prior to that, I was living a lifestyle that wasn't very healthy. I had dropped out of school when I was in the 10th grade. And so I started experimenting with substances. And so I have a history of substance use.
Okay.
And so it was time for me to get my life together. And I do talk to my son, and I'm open about it. And I tell him, you know, when I got pregnant with him, that it gave me an opportunity to look at life a little bit differently and to make some different choices. And so he, in a way, I feel like he saved me.
Yeah.
You know? And so I did have my son, and I thought, okay, I'll be alone for a little while. And, you know, at that time, I think that I needed to still work on myself, but didn't recognize it at the time. And then I met my daughter's father about 2 years after I had my son. And, you know, I did. I thought about, you know, I wanted a father for my son. I still wanted a father for my son. And I thought that this person would be great. You know, we really tried to make it work. We had a lot of challenges. He was not very kind to me at times. And about, I don't know, 3.5-4 years into our relationship, I got pregnant with my daughter. Him and I were going to get married. Then he decided to go back to his ex. And so then
after 4 years?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So I was there again, a single parent, and decided that I was still going to have my daughter and I was going to move along. And so, you know, my kids also know this story. So I'm driving down the street in my little car. I had a little Honda at the time. And I was like, okay, I have one son, and now I have another child on the way. What am I going to do? How am I going to take care of my children? I didn't have any education. I dropped out in the 10th grade. Of course, I had jobs. You know, I worked in restaurants and things like that. But I didn't have anything that was going to sustain me and be able to provide my children the life that I thought that they deserved. So I said, okay, what is it that you like to do? And, or what is it that you're interested in? And I thought, okay, maybe I can be a drug and alcohol counselor. You know, I had a previous history with substances. You know, I felt myself on the other side of it now and would like to help people that wanted to also decide to change their life. And so I went to a local community college in my area, and they actually had a substance use program, drug and alcohol counseling. And I was like, okay. And they said, well, we can go ahead and register you, even though I didn't have a GED or high school diploma. Wow. And so
did they make you do that first, complete your GED?
No.
I think
they do. I think now you have to have it, but back then they didn't. And so I enrolled in 1997, August of 1997. I enrolled myself at college. And I went through college the whole time with being pregnant with my daughter, you know, trying to get this degree. And then while I was there, I talked to a counselor, and she goes, well, you don't have to just get your certificate. You can get an associate's in human services along the way. And I was like, I never saw myself with any degree. I didn't even know really what an AA degree meant or what that meant. But I was like, well, what the heck? I might as well try. And so I went ahead and I agreed to do that. And I had my daughter in the middle of that. I had her, and I took about 3 weeks off after I had her, and then I went right back to school. And I ended up with an AA degree. And so from there, through that process, you had to do like an internship for substance abuse. You had to get like some hours for the certificate and everything. And then after it was all over, one of the places that I did an internship, they referred me to another agency. And when they referred me, I went to this place. I had an interview and I started being a drug and alcohol counselor. But before I graduated with my AA degree, my dad said, well, how are you going to get an AA degree if you don't even have a high school diploma? I go, well, Dad, they're letting me do it. I don't have to have a diploma. Mm-hmm. And so I graduated in 2000. And so December 1999, my dad says, I'll pay for your GED. Go take the test.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, I really didn't want to do it, but I figured it was a good time because I had already taken math, science, English. I was like, these are the things that are in the GED.
You're already in there. Yeah.
So I took the GED test. I passed it with flying colors the first time. And so right before I got my AA degree, I ended up getting my GED. Wow. So I thought that was pretty cool. So I was grateful that my dad goes, you know, just do it the right way. You're not going to regret it. And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that. Absolutely.
So I have a couple of questions. I just want to backtrack a little bit. So you dropped out of high school when you were in the 10th grade. What was the reason for dropping out of school at that age? Was it family obligations that you needed to work and help support the family? Or what was your life like? Look like? What did your life look like then that led you to dropping out in the 10th grade?
You know, during that time, there was a lot happening in my family. My parents were, you know, going through a divorce, and it wasn't a very good one. My mom decided that it was best if we stayed with my father in the house. My dad had a big house, and she was like, I'll go live in an apartment. You guys stay with your father. And I think that was the best thing because she wanted to be in the world a little bit during that time. And so it was best that we stay with my dad for some type of stability. But, you know, I had a really difficult time with my parents' divorce. And because there was a lot of domestic violence, there was a lot of abuse. And so I was going through a lot. And by the time that this happened, by the time I was in the 10th grade, I was already well into using substances and going to parties and not going to school. And so the high school that I went to, they said, you know, this isn't really for you. We're going to send you to a continuation school. And so I said, okay. And well, I didn't really have a choice. And so I went to the continuation school. My dad got me a car and he says, okay, go to school. And it was far away from my house. It was in a whole nother city where my current high school.
Did you grow up in Southern California? You did. Okay.
And so I started going to the school and I actually did well. There was an accounting class I took and I really liked it. And then my life just took another turn. And at my work, at the time I was working at a restaurant. And I asked my job, I said, can I just work more hours? And my dad said, you need to pay for your car insurance or whatever. And I said, okay. And so they said, yeah. And so I went to the school and I said, okay, if I don't want to come here anymore, what do I do? And they said, well, have your mom or dad sign this paper. So they gave me a paper. I signed it and took it back the next day.
So the school said that they didn't encourage you to stay.
They were like,
wow,
it didn't really matter at that point. And so my parents didn't know what I had done. They knew that I was leaving the house every day, which I was, but I was going to work. I was working instead of like 3 or 4 hours. I was going ahead and putting in an 8-hour shift. And so I was working all day because school was only half day anyway. And so I was just working. I was just working full time, which gave me more money to do what I wanted to, hang out with my friends, go places. I had my own money, bought my own things and food and things like that, gas for my car. And so that's kind of how that happened.
Wow. So you got pregnant with your oldest child, your son at 22. What was the reaction from your family when they found out that you were expecting?
They were not happy. They were not happy. My dad was very, very upset. He was very upset. My brother was very upset. My mom was upset, but in a different way. She was just like, oh my God, what are you going to do? Because they knew that I wasn't living the best lifestyle. They knew it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the concern was that how is she going to raise a kid if she's going to continue to live in that lifestyle? Now I understand their concern. I don't agree with their approach. You know, I felt like nobody wanted me. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any clothing. I didn't have anything. And so my dad literally told me I needed to leave the house, and he threw me outside the front door, and I left. And it was really hard for me. And then between him and my mom says, you know, you can't just have her on the street. She is having a child. And so my mom would say she can stay with me some days, but she also needs to go with you a couple of days. And so my dad would let me in the house, you know, on the weekends, but I kind of just stayed in the room. I didn't bother. I would clean the house. I would do it. I would just basically stay out of his way.
Yeah.
And then one day I went over there, and there was, like a nightgown or big maternity shirt or something, whatever. It was on the bed because he knew I didn't have any clothes. I had like one or two pairs of pants, two shirts, and a couple pairs of socks. And that's all that I had. Like, I didn't have any clothes or anything. And I was getting really large.
You didn't have any maternity clothes. Those were your regular clothes. Oh,
wow. Well, no, I had two maternity shirts and like a couple of pairs of pants. Okay. And it was like, so I was constantly washing my clothes. I was stayed clean, but I didn't have I didn't have anything. And I was like, you know, what was I going to do? Anyways, and so when he gave me that shirt, I was probably about maybe 7.5, 8 months pregnant. And I was like, okay, maybe now he's accepting of what is about to happen.
Yeah.
And so things from there got a little bit better, you know. And then when I had my son, of course, my mom was present. When I had my baby, my brother showed up. And then lastly, my dad came right after I had my son, and my dad held him, and he's been in love with my son ever since.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's so many stories like that, especially, you know, with young pregnancies, teenage pregnancies, of parents being so upset. But then once the baby comes, it's like, how can you not just fall in love with the baby and be supportive of your child who just had a baby? It's not ideal, but it's like the baby just changes everything once they're actually there, you know?
I know now that, you know, like I said, my dad, they didn't know what direction I was going to go to. They didn't know if I was going to continue the lifestyle or if I was going to get my stuff together. Like, they didn't know. And I get it. I would have been afraid too. At the time, I think I could have used a little bit more support. You know, but it is what it is. And eventually, you know, when my son came, everything was great. And my, you know, my family was kind of put back together. And so when my daughter had her son, I made sure that I was there, you know, to help her and to be there for her. So I wanted to give her what I didn't get in the beginning of pregnancy.
Yeah. I think too, you know, people from older generations, they have a very, in my opinion, kind of a very archaic way of thinking, where everything has to be, marriage and kids have to be, you know, like done at certain times, at certain paces. And it does not, that's just not the reality of how life works. And so they you know, they handle things a little bit differently than I feel like our generations have learned to handle unexpected things that happen and just be a little bit more flexible. They're caring, but they just kind of act out a little bit in a way that we can't quite really understand, I guess. It's just how kind of how their generation was taught, I guess, was raised.
Well, I get that I didn't fit the mold to what my parents would have liked. You know, they had friends or relatives that, you know, they had daughters and their daughters had husbands and they had education and they had this and they had that. And then there was me. You know, what were they going to say?
Yeah.
What could they say positive about my lifestyle that I was living? There wasn't a whole bunch. And they tried. They tried to put me through beauty school. I got my esthetician's license when I was 18. My father tried to get me a decent car to go around in, you know. But I just think it got to a point where they were just at their wits' end on what to do. And so it took a long time, even after I got my AA degree. And then, you know, later on, I got a bachelor's degree and I got a master's. I think my dad finally saw after many, many years, because, you know, I, in the middle of all this, I get married to somebody who wasn't very healthy for me, that I was I'm finally on the right track. And it did take a while, but that was just my journey.
Yeah. And it's like that for every, you know, every person in their early 20s. Like, nobody at that age has it together. Nobody at that age knows what they're doing or what they're going to do for their future, and, you know, just knows how to handle things accordingly. But when you have a baby, it adds an extra layer of like responsibility and worry for your relatives, like, oh, they really have to get it together. So it kind of, I don't know, exacerbates the situation. But if you think about it, like every 20 something is a little lost and trying to figure it out. So it's not abnormal to kind of be in that place, I don't think. It's just, like I said, the baby makes it a little bit more stressful. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So when you went to the local community college, you got your certificate and your AA degree. How long did that take? How long did the program, each program take?
I don't remember how long the certificate program took. It wasn't as long, of course, as the AA. But I started going in August of 1997, and I graduated in June of 2000.
Oh, so it's about
3 years, maybe?
3 years, a little bit, yeah. Okay. And so both of your kids were born when you finished your AA. What did you do from there? What did your life look like then? You had two little ones. I'm assuming you started working full-time.
I did. I started working full-time. I got a job at this place that was willing to hire me as a drug and alcohol counselor. So I started to do that. And one of the challenges I had, you know, being a young mom of two small children, I had a newborn basically in a toddler, was finding childcare. You know, my parents had their life, and my stepmother, bless her, she helped me so much with my children, my son and my daughter. But, you know, sometimes they weren't available, you know. And when they hired me, it was swing shift. And that's a really, really hard shift to try to find childcare in. You know, and so I had went through a couple of friends, and they were able to help me with my kids. I had a neighbor help me with my kids. I had a lot of challenges trying to get them, you know, to daycare or to school or to this or to that. It was really, really hard. And I look back and I don't know how I even did it. How did I manage to through college, my first time being in school, raising two kids and trying to figure out childcare? You know, I don't know how.
Yeah, it's a lot. I had a, you know, kind of had it similar. I only had one child, but I did graduate school, worked a couple serving jobs, and my son was a toddler at that age. I don't know how I did it. I could never do it now. It sounds so exhausting to think about.
Yeah, it's true.
It's better that we're young when all that is going on, because you kind of have the energy and you have the like motivation. You like want to be successful and work and get the degrees and all of that now. And maybe, yeah, all that is so far behind me, but I don't know how I did it. I don't know how you, like you said, I don't know how you did it. It's just like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And then eventually the job that I was at, they asked me to do another position, which was a daytime position. So I think I worked that swing shift for a few months, couple months, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I started working a daytime position, which made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, taking the kids to school, I can have to depend on the family or friends. And I had like this whole schedule of people to pick up or drop off. And, you know, because I worked about 45 minutes from my house, maybe 35 minutes from my house. It depends on traffic. So, you know, but it made it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
eventually I got through it. It was a lot of hard work. And then eventually from that position, they asked me to be like a director position or manager or coordinator. They called it something. Mm-hmm. So I took that position. That position was also daytime. It gave me a little bit more money to help with my kids. We had a little tiny apartment, which I loved. And we had our own little place and, you know, and things were going well.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Awesome. During that time period with two little ones and managing a full-time job and all of that, how did you incorporate any type of social life for yourself or any type of dating life for yourself? Was that a priority for you, or did it get put on the back burner?
It wasn't really a priority for me for a long time. After I had my son, I gained a lot of weight with pregnancy, which is why I only had two kids. I gained like 75 pounds with each child. And then after I had them, the weight just didn't come off. Some women are fortunate enough to kind of bounce back. Mm-hmm. I'm not a bounce backer.
Yeah.
And so I was very insecure about my body, about how I looked and things like that. And so I was not interested really in going out until after a period of time when the weight started coming off. And then I would try to make friends. You know, I had my best friend that I was close to. And so she lived close to me. And so I would spend time with her. But initially, it wasn't really important to me. I just wanted to focus on my kids.
That's another tricky thing, I think, too, about like dating as a single mom. If you're not a bounce backer, like you have a totally different body than what you had before you had the baby, and feeling confident about your body and feeling like you look good is important as a human being, as a woman, especially if you're going to try to date and like attract somebody, but you just feel so uncomfortable like in your body. It's like you don't even want to date, you know, you don't even want to go out and be social and do anything. It's like it's so hard. It's just it's a different experience.
I always had a lot of body issues growing up. You know, I always had a lot of body issues, so I can recall my parents, you know, telling me that I was fat. You know, my mom was always trying to get me to go to the gym. I would come home from school and she would have like a exercise bike in my room. And I always felt like there was something wrong with my body. It was always like, there was always something that they felt that I needed to fix. And so I definitely had body image issues growing up for sure. You know, and then after having a child, I even had them even more. So it just compiled what I already believed. And then looking at myself, you know, I had a lot of body issues that I've had to really work on. Even now with my current therapist, it's definitely a topic that we've discussed for sure.
I think every woman can, you know, in a way relate to body issues. It's just hard to, it's hard to manage. And you just have to get to a place of acceptance, I think. But it's hard.
Yeah.
You, for a while your kids were like of school age, you were married. So, will you tell us a little bit about how you met that person, or how you ended up getting married, and what that relationship was like? You know, going into as much detail as you're comfortable discussing.
So, when I was working at this place, I met this person. They were like affiliated with them. They did like construction work or maintenance work for them, and then I met him there, and we started to date. And I was really excited because I felt like, okay, somebody's accepting me with two children. I you know, I have a little bit of body fat. They don't mind the way that I look. And I was like, I was kind of like excited, and I felt the need to get into a relationship. And I got to tell you, I gotta be honest, if I can go back, I would have ran away from this person. But at the time, it felt magical. It felt like, okay, it's my turn. You know, feeling like, you know, it's my turn. We quickly moved in together. I left my little apartment, my little safe place, and we moved in to a city that was closer to my work. Because I remember I told you I was like 45 minutes away from work, to be a lot closer to my work. And I liked the area. And, we rented a home, and then the abuse started. It started right away. Like I was kind of like in shock, and I didn't know what to do. I felt like I didn't have anywhere to go because I'd given up my little apartment, and, you know, my parents were, not happy that I was in a relationship. That they wanted me to continue to work on myself and my children.
So did you kind of hide what was going on in the relationship from them?
A little bit, because I already know that I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I was still young. Telling me anything. I wanted to make decisions. And at the time, I thought I knew everything and nobody was going to tell me any different.
Right. You know? And you never want to go at that age. You don't want to go back to your parents and be like, I was wrong. You were right. It's hard to kind of swallow your pride.
Because I already knew what my parents thought of me. You know, I grew up knowing what they thought of me. So, and then to be in this situation, like, it was really, really difficult. you know, over time, my parents kind of learned what was taking place. And of course, being in a situation where there's violence, you know, you go through the cycle. I know a lot more now than I knew then. I also grew up in a house where there was violence. So I understand that I just repeated the same scenario that I grew up in.
Yeah. It's almost like that's the norm. That's what you're almost used to.
I didn't say, hey, I'm going to find a man who's going to be abusive. Right? It just, it kind of like happened. And because I grew up in that environment, I knew how to navigate it. I knew how to be quiet. I knew how to hide it. I knew to just keep everything, you know, with a tight lid, with nobody knowing.
Yeah.
Because that's what I grew up doing. And so eventually, you know, after the first time, there was all the apologies. Everything was great. You know, this will never happen again. And I was like, okay, maybe he's really sorry. He's like, look, let's just get married. You know, I want to be a father of your children. All this. And I bought the story because I wanted it to be my turn, you know?
I believe you wanted to be chosen.
I wanted someone to choose me with two kids that had two different fathers that had both decided that this isn't what they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately we got married, and, you know, not soon after we got married, actually the day that we got married, I knew that I messed up. My gut.
I hear that from, sorry to interrupt you. But I hear that from so many people. They're like, I knew the day I got married, or the day before I got married, I was trying to talk myself out of it, but then I went ahead and did it anyways. Like, you know when something's not right for you. Like, you just know it.
I knew it.
Especially with a marriage or a big life choice like that. So many people just know something's not right. They still go ahead and do it just because, you know, they've already kind of said yes to it.
I almost felt obligated, and I felt that, you know, we had made the appointment. I already got the license. I already did all these things. We just had to finalize it with a ceremony. Nobody was there. Mm-hmm. I always say I got married in a closet. It was this little tiny chapel. Uh-huh. My daughter was having a fit. My son didn't want to be there. He was fussy. And
was your family
nobody
there?
Nobody knew I was getting married.
So it was just you guys, your kids and him. So it was a small, very small wedding.
Very, very small. Ceremony. We went home, made dinner, and I knew I messed up. And so I spent the next 14 years trying to figure out how to get out. I was trapped in that marriage for 14 years once I did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how were your kids during that marriage? Were they, did they know what was going on as far as some of the abuse and how you were being treated? They did.
Yeah, they knew. They seen things that I'll forever regret. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried leaving several times. And they say it takes about 7 to 8 times for a woman to finally leave.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure I met that easy 7 or 8 times to try to leave. You know, it was always, you know, me and my kids, my daughter more so than my son, have talked about it, like the difficulties of like, okay, I'm going to leave. I tried to find an apartment. I couldn't afford the apartment. I was a single parent. How was my children going to get to school? Were they going to have to walk by themselves? If I could afford it, the apartments weren't in the best area. I was going to be at work. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have a lot of cell phones or nothing back then.
Right. Yeah.
How was my little babies going to walk to school? I didn't have any friends. I didn't have anybody out here, you know, to try to lean on to help me. I tried going to shelters. I called and they said, okay, if you go to the shelter, you're going to come here and you're going to stay here and you can't leave. I go, but I have to go to work. They said, oh no, you can't go to work. I go, this is my job. Like, I need to be able to take care of my children. And they said, here, you can't work. And for me, I felt very fortunate to have that position. And I couldn't leave it. That was how I was going to feed my children and eventually try to use that job to try to save money and get out of the situation. And I knew that it was going to be hard for me to start over. I didn't want to go back to working in a restaurant. You know, and so, and I understand because they said that, like, if I went to work and he went to my work, he could follow me back to the domestic violence shelter. They would find me, and that's not safe for myself, my children, or other people. So I understood I tried to go to this other place and they were like, okay, we take turns watching children. We'll watch your kids while you go to work. And I'm like, I don't even know you. And I get there were women, but some of these things made me feel really uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do, you know? And so this went on for a while. And then as my son got into high school, I thought about leaving. I was really close to going, but I thought if I leave now and move back to the city where my family is, my son's not going to get to graduate with his friends. He's had friends since junior high.
Yeah.
How could I take him out of his last couple years of high school and turn his world upside down? I struggled with all of these different situations, still trying to get out. And it was very, very difficult. Eventually, my son did graduate. My son and my ex-husband got into an argument. My son left the house. That really broke me. And so I was in therapy. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the therapist about, you know, leaving. And she was the best therapist at the time, that therapist. It's not the one I have now. It's a different one. And the first three times I saw her, we didn't really speak a word. Other than she said, are you going to come back? Because I just cried the first 3 hours that I was with her, first three sessions. Mm-hmm. And then we would talk about, you know, what was going on in my life and what was happening. And then she, after a while, she would say, so if you left, when do you think that would be? And I said, I don't want to have another Christmas with him. I don't want to do it. I want to have a Christmas where I'm with my children and we can celebrate without the worry of something, him getting upset or something happening. I want to give my kids a good Christmas.
Peaceful Christmas. Yeah.
Peaceful Christmas. And then we went on and then she would keep asking me the question, you know, over time. And then she says, okay, well, have you thought more about leaving? You know, are you still set on, you know, not having another Christmas? And I said, you know, I don't want to have another Thanksgiving. I want to have a peaceful Thanksgiving with my kids, with my family. I want to do the things that I want to do. And I want my family back together. I miss my son. Mm-hmm. And then we kept having this conversation. Then she says, have you thought more about, you know, the Thanksgiving and what that would look like? And I said, I don't want to have another Halloween. I don't want to have another Halloween. I can't. I want to have a peaceful. I kept saying the same thing, right? I want to have a great Halloween. I want to give out candy with my kids and I want us to have a good time, do some activities. And then September comes and I find out that my ex-husband is using substances. And when he's on substances, he's even meaner than he was when he wasn't.
He
was on substances. I didn't know. And I found out. And I called him and we had an ugly conversation. And then I just sat down and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need to come to your house. I'm leaving. She says, are you sure? I said, I'm sure. She says, okay, I have a room. Will you help with rent? I said, yes, I pay bills. I'll pay.
Yeah.
I'm coming. And she says, are you sure? I said, yes. So I called my son. I told my son, I called a U-Haul place. I reserved a U-Haul. I put the deposit on the U-Haul. Because, see, I had to go into work late that day. So I had to make some phone calls. And I called the U-Haul and I called my best friend at the time and I told her. And everybody was on board. The only person I didn't tell was my daughter. She didn't know. But everybody else knew that I was leaving the next day. And I was like, okay, here it goes. I'm leaving. And I was like wrestling with the fact that after everything that he had done to me, him smoking weed was the final straw. Like I really,
yeah,
it was just, I still can't explain why that was the final straw. And then the next morning we had already been sleeping in separate beds. He was in another room and I was like, oh shoot, he has to leave. Like he has to go to work. So I woke him up and I said, aren't you going to work today? He goes, oh yeah, I'm late. And then I went back to my room and I was getting ready like I was going to work. I was getting ready and I was making my coffee. I was doing everything like normal. And then as soon as he left, I got my daughter up. I told her we're leaving. She goes, I'm not going. I said, we are leaving today. And I got her up. That was a struggle because this was her home, even though it wasn't helping. Yeah. It was her place.
Right? Yeah.
And we went, her and I went to pick up the U-Haul. My son met me at the house. My best friend met me at the house. I had a small U-Haul. I left behind everything except for their personal belongings. And I took the kitchen stuff because that's my thing. Mm-hmm. And then I got in the U-Haul, filled up my car with clothes. I got their stuff in a small U-Haul and we left. And
wow.
We left.
Never looked back.
I never looked back and I was like, it was that easy to leave and I didn't do it 13 years
ago. Right, yeah. Yeah. I think that's the realization. Once you leave anything that's like toxic, like a job or relationship or whatever, you're like, this was so much easier than I thought it was. It's always our fear just holding us back from doing something that's going to better us. Once we just have had enough and we do it, we're like, wow, really wasn't, you know, it's hard, but it's just not as hard or whatever as you think it's going to be.
Yeah. So I left the house September 27th, 2014.
Okay.
Which is before Halloween.
Yeah.
So I
did it before your goal.
Before my goal, right before my goal. You know what I mean? And so I do believe that the reason that it was easy to kind of go was because I had a plan. I was with that therapist for about a year and I had a plan. I talked it through and I allowed my mind and the conversations in therapy to talk about what some of my fears were. What would I do? She was very intentional about helping me create a plan. What does it look like? Where do I store keys? What do I do with personal papers? Mm-hmm. What do I tell my children? Because they say the first, I think 24 or 48 hours when you leave a volatile relationship, some women, they pass because the person comes out.
Yeah.
Them, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
were you scared he was going to do that? That he was going to find you and hurt you?
A little bit. One of the things that that's why I left everything in the house. I said, you know what? He can have it because anything that's associated with him is going to be a reminder of what I'm going to bring into my new life and to my new home.
Yeah.
And so he can have it. If I had wiped out the house, he would have probably came after me. And I left the dog. Mm. We had a dog. And I sat before I left. And I struggled if I take her or not. And I thought if I take her, it'll give him a reason to come for me. And I just said goodbye to the dog. I left everything behind.
Mm-hmm.
Everything behind. And I left. But I do think that talking with the therapist, having a plan, because all the other times that I left, I didn't have a plan. It was out of emotion. It was out of fear. I was running from something. And then when everything calms, the honeymoon starts all over again. And then, you know, I didn't take anything with me. All I had was maybe the clothes that me and the kids had on our backs. And so everything was in the house. And I wanted my kids to have their toys and their dolls things. And their skateboards, whatever it is. But when I had a plan, it was that plan that made it possible for me to follow through and finally go.
Yeah. That's a really incredible therapist. One, because she did help you, you know, write out a plan or think of a plan to leave successfully and leave calmly. But also she didn't outright tell you to leave because therapists are not supposed to give advice or instruction. They're supposed to help you figure out what's best for you by, you know, exploring your feelings and kind of asking the right questions. And so you really created your own timeline. And when you wanted to leave with her saying, asking you like, when would be the right time or what, when would it be ideal or however you said she phrased it. And that's exactly, you know, that's just an excellent therapist because you really figured it out on your own. And then, you know, as you kept returning to therapy, you know, increasing the date or moving up the date that you decided to leave. And then she, you know, just through sessions, just through talking, helped you come up with a plan. I mean, that's an excellent therapist. Yeah.
And talking through my fears and figuring out the plan, like I said, of papers, belongings, what would I take? What will be the most important things for me to take? And really thinking mm-hmm. that through, not when I'm upset, when I'm crying, when I'm fearful. It was at a place of calm where I can really organize my thoughts. And I thought that is what finally was able to help me make that decision to go. He never came after me. We spoke a little bit after that. But it wasn't, you know, that we were going to, you know, get back together or anything like that. It was a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Conversations.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So what did life look like after you left for your kids, for you? How long did it take you to move out of your mom's house and, you know, get settled on your own?
I was with my mom about 7 or 8 months, and then it was time for me to, you know, to get my place. She wanted her personal space back, and I understand. Mm-hmm. And
did your mom remarry at all after getting divorced?
She did remarry one time.
She did. Okay. Yeah,
she did remarry one time when my son was 6 months old. So it was a long time ago. And then,
so she didn't have any more kids.
No. And then they got divorced a few years after they got married. Oh, okay. So she's been married twice, divorced twice.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And, I have a story if you want me to tell you the story about how I found my apartment. You want to hear the story?
Yeah. Is this where you live now?
Yeah, it's where I live now. So me and my daughter, we were going, I think it was Easter. It was Easter. April, right? We had went to a place down by my house for breakfast, met my father there. And my son went, and then, I don't know, I was going to go visit my son's house where he was actually staying at the time. And I was coming down this street, and I came down the street that I rarely come down, right? And I get to the stoplight, and I'm like, where am I? And I'm looking around because it's beautiful. It's all these beautiful trees. It looks like it doesn't belong in the area. Like, where is this at? And so I take a drive through the area, and my daughter had fallen asleep. I wake her up, and we're looking, and I'm like, I want to live here. I want to live here. And I'm looking around, and I see like these townhouses. They're two-story. They have a garage. And then there's some apartments on the side. There's a beautiful park, a pool area, swing sets, like people walking their dogs and families outside. And then there was a Ralph's that was close by, which is where I used to shop at before. So these were things that were familiar to me. And I looked, and I was like, wow, I want to live here. And then I started looking online, trying to find a place, and I found one, and I looked at it, and then the man actually called me back, and I was grocery shopping. He goes, can you come right now? I left my groceries in the store. I said, yes, I'm coming right now. So I came and I showed up.
The landlord said that?
So he called me back because I was calling and looking for this place, and only one of these apartments came available, one of these townhouses. And he called me back. He goes, do you want to come right now? And I left my groceries in the market, and I left him there, and I came here, and I met him. And I told him, I said, you know, I go, I'm coming out of a divorce. Because of my husband's finances, I'm having some financial challenges right now. So my credit may not look the greatest. It wasn't my stuff. It was his stuff, but I'm having to pay the price for it. And I told him, but I have a great rental history. I have a good paying job. And, you know, I was like selling myself. And he says,
okay, sell yourself. Yeah.
Well, I have another family that wants the house. So I will let you know. And I'm walking through this place. I'm walking through here, and I feel myself living here. And I leave, and I call my mom, and I'm crying. She goes, why are you crying? I go, I found where I'm going to live. She says, are you sure? I said, I think this is where we're going to live. And I was so happy. I was so humble. I was so grateful. And I still didn't know if he was going to give it to me or not. And then about a week later, he called me and he says, okay, we're going to give you a chance. He said, there was another family that wanted it. He said, but they have small children. And I think that they're probably going to move out because the place isn't big enough for a growing family where your family is already grown.
Yeah. Right.
So it took every penny that I had. I mean, mm-hmm. every penny, Veronica, that I had to put down the deposit, mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah, I've been there.
They gave mm-hmm. me the place, and I moved in here in May, and we didn't have anything. I was just happy to have my son back with me. You know, my daughter, yeah. It was only a 2-bedroom. We made it work. We didn't have any groceries. We didn't have any furniture. We didn't have nothing. My mom got me an old refrigerator, mm-hmm. old washer dryer I had. And I didn't care. I was grateful. I was so happy.
Yeah, you have your own space. Have
my own place for the first time. Yeah. That was like my sanctuary. So every day I still say I live in a castle, even though I don't. I say I live in a castle because this is my safe sanctuary. And so I've been here.
Yeah.
I've been here ever since. I feel like I kind of mm-hmm. manifested living here.
I think you did. And I have kind of like similar stories to where I previously lived, the apartment I lived at for 10 years, and then where I live now in this townhome. I've been here, it was 3 years in June. Just kind of very random like that. Like, you know, just kind of like, it's always like the things that work out the best are always random and always like you're somebody, how do I say, somebody's taking a chance on you, but it's just like random and it's just like God just working. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like God just like, that's always how I know where I belong somewhere. Because if it's something that kind of just happened out of nowhere, but it kind of works out perfectly, I feel like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. And same thing with our job where we work. That was totally random getting that job. And other things, you know, it's just like, it's just worked out randomly. And I'm like, yeah, this is, and I feel comfortable. This is where I belong, you know? So yeah, it's amazing. Was your daughter already out of high school when you moved there?
No. So my daughter was entering high school, which is why I knew it was okay if I left, because she could start high school anywhere and finish anywhere. She ended up doing home studies. That was best for her. And she actually graduated a little bit early, her doing independent studies.
Oh, nice.
It worked out for mm-hmm. her that way. And so that's the route that she mm-hmm. went. And so she was able to go to school doing type of home studies.
Awesome. Good. Yeah. So it all always works out. I think of that story and just other stories that I've experienced when I start to worry. That's where my mind goes. Like, okay, I'm in this situation. I don't know how it's going to work out, but other things have worked out for myself, for other people. So you just have to just keep the faith. Keep the faith that it's all going to work out for best. Yeah. Very cool. So once you're in your place, you guys are settled, stable. When did the idea to go to school, get your bachelor's and your master's, and then now your PhD, where did that come from?
Well, motivated that? I have, you know, even though I had graduated in 2000 with my AA, I decided at some point a few years after that I wanted to continue my education, that I wanted to transfer. And so mm-hmm. I started taking, you know, one class at a time. And so when I was married, it was really hard to go to school because he wasn't supportive. He would kick me out of the house, lock me out of the house, lock up my computer, you know, give me a hard time while I was doing homework. And so when I say that I have had to fight my way through my education, I mean that literally, you know. And so it took me a really long time to be able to do the transfer classes, to be able to get my bachelor's. And so I was here when I was still going to community college, taking my last stats class and things like that. And finally, I took my last stats class and I was ready to transfer. And then I applied to a university, a Cal State, and then I got accepted, and I only did part-time. So it took me to get my bachelor's a little bit longer as well, because mm-hmm. I was only going two classes at a time. I couldn't, plus where I was working at, I was on call 24/7. And so it was really hard to do school. You know, I worked in Los Angeles, and then where I live at, it's about an hour away. I was on a train, I was on a bus, I was walking, I was, trying to get from work to the train and from the train to the city.
Commute is a job itself.
Oh my gosh. And so it took me a while to get my bachelor's degree. And then the next day I finished my bachelor's degree. And then I went and I found this school that it's like, it is designed for people that work, I think. And so I go every other weekend. And then I did that and I got my master's degree. And then I wasn't sure if I was going to go on. Like I said, I didn't even finish the 10th grade. Like, here I am trying to, who am I to get a master's degree? If you would have told me when I was 22 years old, when I was in my lifestyle, that I would be here at the age of 53 pursuing a doctorate program, I would have told you you were lying. I never saw myself as capable enough to be able to do this. I thought this was for special people. I thought this was for people that had a different lifestyle, because no one really knows my story. But like you said, everybody has a story and everybody has a background.
Everybody.
You know, and so, you know, and I've always felt a lot of shame for my background and things that I've done and things that I've experienced and, you know, my home lifestyle and things like that, and being married to someone who wasn't very kind. I never could have saw myself. I felt like I was just in survival mode for so long that it was just, well, let's just see what happens. And so my whole time getting my bachelor's, I thought, okay, once I get my bachelor's, I'm done. You know, there's no way. I'm not smart enough to get a master's degree. No one's going to accept me into a school. I thought I barely got a bachelor's degree. And lo and behold, I got accepted into a program, and I do really well. I'm really surprised. And so each time it has helped build my confidence, because I didn't have any for a long time, you know?
And that is so, for me, hearing you say that is so wild, because to me, you're so confident in working, because we work together, you're so efficient, you're so smart, you're always so calm, which is something I'm working on, because like when I feel overwhelmed, I'm just like, like, you know, like I'm like a stress case, and you're always just like, well, we're gonna figure it out. Like, we're just gonna, you know, like, you're so calm and level-headed, and it's wild for me to hear you say these things, and I get where it's coming from. And, you know, we all have those thoughts that will tear us down, you know, thinking negative things about ourselves. But like the way that you, the woman you are now, the person you are now seems to be so far from that person that you thought you were, because you're totally not like that. Like I just said, I admire your work ethic. There's no way that like you would think that you couldn't do all that you're doing. Like you are the best. Like, I can't even imagine that, but I get it, because when you have a big struggle and a hard life, you don't think you're capable or worthy of having good things happen to you or great things happen to you. It's hard to get out of that mindset and allow yourself to thrive. Like, it really is.
And, you know, through my current therapist that I've had for 3 years, we've worked a lot on myself. We do a lot of parts work, and we do a lot of working with parts that have shame and feel insecure. Mm-hmm. And we talk about those things, and it has helped me. You know, because I did talk about, like, do I enroll in this doctorate program? Like, and she's like, well, why not? Why not you? And at the end of the master's, I was like, I had to make a decision, because you have to like apply and, you know, you can go through the application process. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know what? If I don't do it, I'm going to regret it. Because I would never know if I could have pursued it. In my master's program, I got through it. It was tough, but I managed it. And before I knew it, it was over. And this program's 3.5 years, because again, I'm still going part time. I could be done in 2, but I'm going the part time route. And I have to do it now. I have to prove this to myself. for everything that I've been through, Veronica, for every, get a little emotional, for every time I was abused, every time I was rejected, every time I felt insecure, this is for me. And this is something I have to do because I am worthy of it. I am worthy of earning my seat at the table and being able to say, you know what, I earned a doctorate degree. And I have to do it for myself because nobody can ever take that away from me, my education. Nobody.
Right.
Nobody. Mm-hmm. So I will finish this doctorate degree no matter what. I might be 60 years old, but I'm going to walk across that stage and I'm going to complete this because I have to do it for me because I've done a lot of work on myself and I'm not mad at my parents for what they put me through. I've learned to forgive myself for the decisions that I've made. I am still working on, I'm still working on not only healing myself, but helping my children heal. I understand that I put them in a situation that I had no business doing. I take full ownership of that. I recognize that. And me and my children are all at different stages of healing. I'm, of course, further along because I've been in therapy multiple times and I'm, you know, currently in therapy again. My daughter's on her journey. My son is on his. But this time, I think that one of the things that I would like to learn more about is once you leave a relationship like that, then what? Because you think that once you leave that everything's going to be great. Even when I got a place, I had the perception that, okay, I have a place. Me and my kids are going to be happy. And we're going to do all these things that I've been wanting to do all these years that I wasn't able to do in that house with that man. And it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been a bowl of roses or bowl of ice cream. It's been hard. It's been hard healing myself while watching my children heal themselves too and being supportive of them.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me getting a doctorate degree is to show them that I am doing better. I want my kids to be proud of me, and they are. I want my kids to see that you can overcome adversity. And I want my grandchildren to understand that they will never have to live that lifestyle. My grandkids will not know any of this stuff. We collectively, me and my children, and it's hard. It's not easy. We have our good days. We have our bad days. But we are breaking the cycle because the cycle didn't start with me. The cycles didn't start with my parents. The cycle probably started somewhere with my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents. And the cycle has started generations way, 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 way back. This wasn't anything new.
Yeah.
And so through my education, I have learned that it's hard to break the cycle, but it's possible.
Yeah, it is possible. And that's where I think, you know, a big focus does need to be put on leaving an abusive relationship or even like a mutual like divorce between two people that didn't have a healthy relationship. There's so much about leaving, you know, this is what you need to do to leave, whatever. But there's not a lot out there. I don't feel like, unless you're working one-on-one with a therapist, but there's not a lot out there about like, how do you heal? How do you repair your family system or improve the family dynamics after going through trauma? I don't feel like there's a lot of that out there. And that's just as important as taking the step to leave. Okay, so you have the plan, you're splitting up, you're divorcing, whatever, you're going to move here, I'm going to move here. But like, how does everybody heal from this? That's tricky and it can take a long time. And if it's not worked on, then it just creates more like chaos in everybody's lives.
It's been really hard. Like, you know, I have dated here and there, having relationships here and there, nothing where I've introduced my kids to anybody. That still has not happened. My kids have not really ever seen me with anybody. And that's on purpose. You know, that's really on purpose. Until I'm fully ready and I'm still working on myself. It's been 10 years. 11 now. It's been 11 years now. And I'm still working on myself. I think I'm still really committed to helping my children, because that's really important for me, because that's a big source of my pain, still a part of my healing. I'm working on it with my therapist, but I feel like when I really feel like my kids are okay, then maybe it'll be time for me. And some may say, well, you know, you have to live your life and, you know, you shouldn't do too much, but I can't help but to still be there for them right now. And it's important for me to build memories. So, you know, I'm able, this is the third year in a row that I get to take my children on vacation. You know, I haven't been able to do that financially before. I was just, you know, trying to make ends meet, trying to buy a couch, trying to buy some rice or some beans or some bread, and trying to figure out how we were going to pay the electric bill. You know what I mean? And so now things look a little bit different. You know, we spend lots of time at Disneyland, like I said. We do things. And so I am very purposeful in making memories. We celebrate everything in my house. Anything we celebrate, we cook. We spend lots of time together. And that's really, really important for me, that we have new memories together and that I can support my kids, you know, through their journey.
Yeah. Those things are so important as a family unit, to get out of that survival mode and start to thrive. And it doesn't even have to be like big trips or anything like that. It can just be, like you said, cooking at home together for somebody's birthday, or sitting around like watching a TV show that you guys all like to watch together. Yeah. Like, me and my son do that all the time. And it's like, it's just about that quality time that you're spending with each other, talking, laughing. It's so bonding and it's so healing, and it's so necessary. Like, it's just a part of the healing process, the moving on process. And, you know, going to school and doing all these things for yourself, you mentioned this, it's so important that your kids are seeing you do that. It's so important that they're seeing you do something for yourself. It takes you out of the house. It takes you like kind of out of that mom caregiver role. And you're doing something for Carla. Yeah. You know, you're educating yourself. You're engaging with your peers who are like-minded. You're doing something for yourself as a woman, as a human being. And you're accomplishing your goals. It's so, so, so important for your children at any age, older, younger, whatever, to like see you doing those things and meeting those goals, because it will just only make their lives better and inspire them.
Yeah, my kids are great. So we talk about it, but they have been in every single one of my graduations. They were there for my AA degree, my BA, my MA, and they'll be there for my doctorate. So they were different. They were all different ages, of course, but they have really been there through all of it. And my kids are absolutely amazing. You know, we cook a lot. Yeah. My son is a very, very, very good cook. He doesn't think so, but he's really good. My daughter is really good. Like, we are that is our joy, is to be able to cook together and try new things and to do things. And I love spending time with them. They had a fight on this weekend on Netflix, a female boxing fight, and I just wanted to cook and have them over. And so I get to see them all the time. Like, you're right, we just do things together frequently. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And too, like, you're in a safe space to do that. Like, everybody can be themselves. Nobody's walking on eggshells. Yes. Nobody's worried somebody's going to yell at them. Like, that space that you have for your family in your home is
so important. Yeah, I want my grandkids to feel that kind of love. I want my grandkids to understand that and feel it. And my grandkids know that they are loved so much.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, you should be so proud of yourself. You've been through a lot, and you are just you thrive, and you're going to continue to thrive. And like I mentioned earlier, I am like honored to just be your friend and to know you. And I'm excited to see what you'll do in the future. What are your future plans after you complete your PhD?
I don't know. Because, you know, they ask us in class, like, you know, what do you want to do? And I always say, I don't want to be a full-time therapist. I'm more of an administrator. Yeah. I've been being a director of programs for more than 20 years now. And so I like administration. Yeah. And so I'm, you know, I want to work with women. Mm-hmm. I want to work with people that have trauma because I have had so many years, a lifetime of trauma, right? And abuse. Yeah. And so I want to help women understand. And I really think that I want to work with women on what happens now that you're gone. How do you navigate that? How do you heal yourself so that, you know, when you have other relationships, they look a little different. You know, they're a little help. How do you help your children navigate their feelings? What do you do? And so I want to be able to support that process with women because I think it's so important because we don't know what to do. No one, everyone said, well, just leave. And so, okay, that was the easy part that I found out. But it was after the fact mm-hmm. that I still don't always know that I'm doing the right thing with my children or myself. And I'm still figuring it out. And so I want to support women that want that help.
Yeah. Yeah. That guidance is so necessary for young single moms. That's part of the reason, like, kind of why I wanted to do this podcast. Like, I'm still learning so much about just how to navigate life and function in a healthy way. But I know I still have some skills or things I've learned or, you know, some of my experiences I can pass on to moms who are, you know, younger. They're just kind of, they've had a couple of kids and they're, you know, kind of in the trenches of like being a single mom. Like, I feel like I can pass on some of the wisdom I've gained from my experiences. And then I know there's so many women, you know, like you and like some of the other women I've interviewed, that the same, you know, they've had their experiences and they can pass it on and help, help guide the younger generation, I guess, or, you know, somebody who's still really, really, really struggling. Yeah. What would be, as we kind of wrap up here, what would be like one piece of advice that you would give, like a new, single mom who's kind of in the trenches and really struggling?
That is a great question. I think one of the things that I would try to pass along is, excuse me, be patient with yourself. Know that you're not going to do everything the right way. You're going to make mistakes. And that's okay because this is all a part of learning. And mm-hmm. you may find yourself in situations where you're in a relationship that's not okay. And just know that there's a lot of help out there. Yeah. You know, you don't have to wait like I did for 14 years to figure it out. I wasted, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I don't want to say I wasted. I let pass so many years that I wish I could have given back to my children. You know, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't want a woman to have to go through that. So, you know, there are more resources out there now, you know, but just know that you're not going to do everything right. And that's okay. Just do the best that you can.
Do the best that you can. I think really too, you know, there's so much emphasis in our culture, like get married, have a partner, whatever, you know, all of that. But for a mom who's been through, a young woman who's been through, you know, some traumatic experiences, either childhood or marriage or whatever, I think for a while it's really, it's best for like, for a woman to stay single and just focus on herself and her kids. It, you know, that comes with its own set of challenges. And you may feel like emotionally, you know, you want a partner, you want somebody to be there for you, and you want, like you worded it, it's your turn, you know. But really, like, I don't know, I just, until you've done a lot of work on yourself, I think it's best to, you know, stay on your own and just focus on your children and yourself and going to school and becoming financially independent and financially stable. Because that's one thing I've always, for a while, I really, really struggled with. Like, I don't have a partner. I didn't end up getting married. And now I just turned 40 and I'm like still single. And I have other friends who have either been married a really long time or they were single mom for a while and now they're married. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? What haven't I done? But really looking back, the best thing for me and the best thing for my son was exactly how my life played out. because I went to school, I have a great job, I have a work ethic. Not that I wouldn't have those things with a partner, but I just have a very strong sense of independence and a very good, I feel like I have a very good sense of myself and self-worth. I have my family who I can depend on.
Learning to love myself is still a work in progress because nobody else is going to love me the way I want to be loved. I have to learn to give it to myself and to watch, for my children to be able to watch me love myself. That is their healing also. You know, to be able to know how do you give yourself self-love? How do you, we always use a term out now is self-care, self-care, self-care. Well, what does that actually look like? You know, and until I work on myself, I don't know that I'm ready for a full-time real relationship. Like I said, I've had some, but nothing's really panned out the way that, you know, I wanted it. It's because I still needed to work on myself. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm in relationships, I find myself giving more than I'm getting.
Yes. Yep. Me you too. Know? Yep.
And I give so much that I lose who I am. Then I become
yep, me too.
I think so. I'm going to fill up my own cup right now.
I'm going to fill up my own cup. I'm going to enjoy some of the things that you can do as a single person. Like, I love having a bed all to myself. Yeah, sometimes I wish I had somebody in bed with me, sure. But, like, at the same time, I can spread out. I can, like, lay in bed and watch TV at night and not worry that I'm waking somebody up or whatever. I can have all my books on the other side of my bed and my remote and, like, just stuff like that. Like, just kind of that freedom to just, like, do as I please. Yeah. Maybe one day there'll be a partner and I will try to focus on the benefits of having a partner. But what my life looks like now, focusing on the great things about what this life looks like, you know, and it's just very important. Enjoy where you're at.
Sure.
All right. Well, I guess we can wrap up. Was there anything else you wanted to mention, wanted to say? I don't know.
No, I think that's it. Thank you for letting me share my story. Sharing my story is also part of my healing because I've hid this. Mm-hmm. Most people don't know all of this. My family.
No, I didn't know a lot of, I remember one time we were, it's when we were in Pasadena, like all together as a group. And we had went to go get, do you remember when you went to go get pizza that one time down the street from the office? Yeah. And you mentioned something about your ex-husband. I can't remember. Just something that I was like, oh, she's probably like been through a lot. You know, you just quickly mentioned something. But that was really all that I had known. And then I know we talked about your daughter and her being a single parent and kind of some of your concerns for her about that. But it's awesome to just really hear your story and the things you've been through. And hopefully, you know, I know there are other women who will be able to listen and relate to your story, or a young girl trying to get her life to the point where yours is. So it'll be very beneficial for people to hear. I know that. Thank you so much.